quickly calming down, laughed to Irwin. "And that's only the third time in my career I've thrown an instrument onto the floor. I have to wait a few minutes while yet another applicator was found. The faulty ones, for some strange reason, turned out to have stiff hinges. Only later did I remember that the surgeon I had watched 30 years ago, and whose trainee I became, had told me that he had once encountered the same problem, although his patient had been less fortunate than mine. He was the only surgeon I knew who always checked the applicator before using it. Doctors like to talk of the art and science of medicine. I've always found this rather pretentious, and prefer to see what I do as a practical craft. Clipping aneurysms is a skill, and one that takes years to learn. Even when the aneurysm is exposed and ready to take a clip, after the thrill of the chase, there is still the critical question of how I place the clip across the aneurysm, and the all-important question of whether I have clipped the aneurysm's neck completely without damaging the vital artery from which the aneurysm has grown. This aneurysm looks relatively easy, but my nerves are too frayed to let my assistant take over again, and so with yet another applicator I clip the aneurysm. The shape of this aneurysm, however, is such that the clip does not pass completely over the neck. I can just see a little part of the aneurysm neck sticking out beyond the tips of the clip. "Not quite across," Jeff says helpfully. "I know," I snap. This is a difficult part of the operation. I can partly open the clip and reposition it to get a more perfect position, but I might tear the aneurysm in the process and be left looking at a fountain of arterial blood rushing up the microscope towards me. On the other hand, if the aneurysm neck is not completely occluded, there is some danger, though it is difficult to say how great, that the patient will eventually suffer a further hemorrhage in the future. A famous English surgeon once remarked that a surgeon has to have nerves of steel, the heart of a lion, and the hands of a woman. I have none of these. And instead, at this point of an aneurysm operation, I have to struggle against an overwhelming wish to get the operation over and done with, and to leave the clip in place, even if it is not quite perfectly placed. "The best is the enemy of the good," I will growl at my assistants, for whom the operation is a wonderful spectator sport. They take a certain pleasure in pointing out that I have not clipped the aneurysm as well as I might have done, since they will not have to cope with the consequences of the aneurysm tearing. And if that happens, it is always exciting to watch their boss struggling with torrential hemorrhage. I certainly enjoyed it when I was a trainee. Besides, they will not have to experience the hell of seeing the wrecked patient afterwards on the ward round and feel responsible for the catastrophe. "Oh, very well," I will say, shamed by my assistant, but also thinking of the hundreds of aneurysms I have clipped in the past and how, like most surgeons, I have become bolder with experience. Inexperienced surgeons are too cautious. Only with endless practice do you learn that you can often get away with things that at first seem far too frightening and difficult. I cautiously open the clip a little and gently push it further along the aneurysm. "There's still a little bit out," says Jeff. Sometimes, at these moments, my past disasters with aneurysm surgery parade before me like ghosts. Faces, names, wretched relatives I forgot years ago suddenly reappear. As I struggle against my urge to finish the operation and escape the fear of causing a catastrophic hemorrhage, I decide at some unconscious place within myself, where all the ghosts have assembled to watch me, whether to reposition the clip yet again or not. Compassion and horror are balanced against cold technical precision. I repositioned the clip a third time. It finally looks well-placed. "That will do," I say. "Awesome," says Jeff happily, but sad not to have put the clip on himself. I left Jeff to close, retired to the surgical sitting room next to the theatre, and lay down on the large red leather sofa which I had bought for the room some years ago, and thought once again of how so much of what happens to us in life is determined by random chance. After brain surgery, all patients are woken up quickly by the anaesthetist so that we can see if they have suffered any harm or not. With difficult operations, all neurosurgeons will wait anxiously for the anaesthetic to be reversed, even if, as with this operation, one is fairly certain that no harm has been done. She awoke perfectly, and once I had seen her, I left the hospital to go home. As I cycled away from the hospital under dull, grey clouds, perhaps I felt only a little of the joy that I used to feel in the past after successful aneurysm operations. At the end of a successful day's operating, when I was younger, I felt an intense exhilaration. As I walked round the wards after an operating list with my assistants beside me and received my patients' heartfelt gratitude and that of their families, I felt like a conquering general after a great battle. There have been too many disasters and unexpected tragedies over the years, and I have made too many mistakes for me to experience such feelings now, but I still felt pleased with the way the operation had gone. I had avoided disaster, and the patient was well. It was a deep and profound feeling which I suspect few people other than surgeons ever get to experience. Psychological research has shown that the most reliable route to personal happiness is to make others happy. I have made many patients very happy with successful operations, but there have been many terrible failures, and most neurosurgeons' lives are punctuated by periods of deep despair. I went back into the hospital that evening to see the woman. She was sitting up in bed, with the large black eye and swollen forehead that many patients have for a few days after an operation like hers. She told me that she felt sick and had a headache. Her husband was sitting beside her and looked angrily at me as I quickly dismissed her bruises and post-operative pain. Perhaps I should have expressed more sympathy, but after the near disaster of the operation, I found it difficult to take her minor post-operative problems seriously. I told her that the operation had been a complete success and that she would soon feel better. I had not had the opportunity to talk to her husband before the operation, something I usually take great care to do with relatives, and he had probably appreciated the risks of the operation even less than his wife had done. We have achieved most as surgeons when our patients recover completely and forget us completely. All patients are immensely grateful at first after a successful operation, but if the gratitude persists, it usually means that they have not been cured of the underlying problem and that they fear that they may need us in the future. They feel that they must placate us, as though we were angry gods, or at least the agents of an unpredictable fate. They bring presents and send us cards. They call us heroes and sometimes gods. We have been most successful, however, when our patients return to their homes and get on with their lives and never need to see us again. They are grateful, no doubt, but happy to put us and the horror of their illness behind them. Perhaps they never quite realized just how dangerous the operation had been and how lucky they were to have recovered so well, whereas the surgeon, for a while, has known heaven, having come very close to hell. Chapter 3. Hemangioblastoma. Noun. A tumor of the brain or spinal cord arising from the blood vessels. I arrived at work feeling cheerful. There was a solid cerebellar hemangioblastoma on the list. These are rare tumours which are formed of a mass of blood vessels. They are benign, meaning that they can be cured by surgery, but they will prove fatal if untreated. There is a small risk of disaster with surgery, since the mass of blood vessels can cause catastrophic hemorrhage if you do not handle the tumour correctly. But there is a